Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Sunyavari Parshat Shadisha Tarani. So, Hare Krishna. It is on the one side a great honor to be able to render this service. To all of you, you are the most rare souls. Being Krishna's devotees. So I've been asked by the representatives here to speak. And as I said, it's a great honor to do this service. But in the presence of God brothers who are superior to me, in seniority, in knowledge, and in devotion. It is also very embarrassing personally. So anyway, we shall try our best. Hare Krishna. So please bear with me. I'm a great offender. But I shall try to render some service to you. Thank you very much. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are to read this morning from the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th chapter, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Today's verse is text number 13. Please repeat this after me, line by line. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is spoken by Lord Nrisimhadev. My dear Prahlad, while you are in this material world, you will exhaust all the reactions of pious activity by feeling happiness. And by acting piously, you will neutralize impious activity. Because of the powerful time factor, you will give up your body, but the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems. And being fully freed from all bondage, you will return home back to Godhead. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, Evam Prahladas Yam Shena Sadhana Siddhatvam Nitya Siddhatvam Cha Naradad Vijajgeyam. There are two classes of devotees, the Sadhana Siddhi and the Nitya Siddha. Prahlad Maharaj is a mixed Siddha. That is, he is perfect, partly because of executing devotional service and partly because of eternal perfection. Thus he is compared to such devotees as Narada. Formerly Narad Muni was the son of a maidservant, and therefore in his next birth he attained perfection, sadhana siddhi, because of having executed devotional service. Yet he is also a nitya siddha, because he never forgets the supreme personality, personality of Godhead. The word kushalena is very important. One should live in the material world very expertly. The material world is known as the world of duality. Because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. Although he does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. Padam padam yadvi padam. Thus, even while performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. Prahlad Maharaj himself had experience of this. For even his father became his enemy. A devotee should expertly manage to think always of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. This is the expert management of papa punya, pious and impious activities. An exalted devotee like Prahlad Maharaj is jivan mukta. He is liberated even in this very life in the material body. Bhogena punyam kushalina papam kalevaram kala javena hitva kirtim vishudam suraloka gitam vitaya mameshasi mukta bandha. My dear Prahlad, while you are in this material world, you exhaust all the reactions of pious activity by feeling happiness, and by acting piously, you will neutralize impious activity. Because of the powerful time factor, you will give up your body, but the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems, and being fully freed from all bondage, you will return home, back to Godhead. Mukam karoti bachalam, pangam langayate girim yat kripa dadam mande shri gurun dina tarinam. So, the platform on which we exist in this material world is known as guna pravaha. This is a term from Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a synonymous term, guna urmi. This means the waves. Pravaha or urmi means waves. Waves of the gunas, waves of the three modes of material nature. This is our platform. So obviously, if this foundation of our life here in the material world is compared to waves, it means it is not at all steady. The tanmatras, that means the objects of our senses, what we hear, what we feel, what we see, what we taste, and what we smell. These are appearing and disappearing within the waves of the three modes. Exactly like if you're standing by a lake or the ocean where there are waves, where you can see the ripples in the surface of the water, you will see within those ripples so many scintillating. That means so many sparkles of light. And they appear and disappear at every moment. So like that, our material existence, everything we experience in this world is appearing and disappearing within the waves of the three modes. And therefore, as it is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, padam padam yadvi padam natesham. There's obviously going to be danger at every step because there are not many in this world like Jesus Christ who can walk on water. So our unfortunate condition is that if we step on a wavy surface, we sink. And that is the material condition. Also, our consciousness is pervaded by these same waves. You see, philosophers, because of my particular material contaminations, I'm very fond of reading philosophical books, so I'm at least knowledgeable in that a little bit. So I know these philosophers, their endeavor is to attain some state of mental equilibrium in the midst of an ever-changing external world. That seems to be the universal attempt of all philosophers. They want to construct in their mind some kind of mental model. Actually, in something I'm writing now, I call it a mental idol. This is real idol worship. The puffed-up philosophers will accuse us of idol worship because we worship Lord Nrisimhadev. But he, as we see here, is the actual shelter for those who are tossing within the waves of the modes. He is not a mental construct. But this is their effort, actually, to create a kind of subtle alternative to deity worship in their minds by constructing some kind of mental model which they place all their faith in, some ism. And we have seen in the recent history of our world, those of you who are a bit older especially, who are politically conscious, when you grew up, then you know in the 60s, in the 70s, there was a great interest in leftist philosophy, socialism, communism. I myself was also a student radical, and I'm sure my godbrothers were also involved in that type of insanity. So we wanted to burn down the universities and raise the red flag. And now that all that ism, leftism, socialism, communism, it is completely discredited. But I know myself and some of my friends, I had some very interesting friends, some of them who ended up blown in pieces by the bombs that they were trying to build. There was an organization in the United States. You also had in Germany an organization called SDS. There was one in America too, Students for a Democratic Society. There was one faction called the Weather Faction, the Weathermen. And they were Maoists. And their whole purpose in life was just to build bombs and blow up government buildings. So I had a few friends. I almost joined that organization. Fortunately, Krishna saved me. Time for confession. I almost became a terrorist. Literally, because that was one of the most terroristic groups in the United States in the 60s. And I had some friends who, some people I knew who became members of that group, and they actually blew themselves up building bombs. So I remember very clearly that fanatical devotion that we had to this cause of leftism and socialism and communism, Maoism and all this and that. And now it's in the garbage can of history, as they say. It's just a piece of garbage wadded up and thrown into the pail. And only anyone who is now still interested in that is considered a real nutcase, you see. So this is my experience of philosophy. We try to build a mental model that we can put our complete faith in. But that too is just a product of the modes of nature and will pass away in time. Will sink down and disappear. So, therefore, the conception of good, what is moral, what is righteous, in the material world is fluctuating. What is good today is bad tomorrow. What was good yesterday is bad today. Even Prabhupada gave this example. For instance, here in this country, it is good, it is proper, it is lawful to drive on the right side of the road. But if you just cross the channel, go to the United Kingdom, and you drive on the right side of the road, you'll be arrested. You see, the bobbies will take you in because we don't do that here. So Srila Prabhupada, that's a very simple example, but Srila Prabhupada in the purport mentions how Prahlad Maharaj himself had the experience of this dangerous position in the material world, in that his own father was his enemy. His own father was a demon. Now, according to the rules of morality, honor thy father and thy mother. That is in the Bible. Not only is it religious, it is commonplace morality. We should respect our elders. We should respect our parents. Vedic Shastra also says, father and mother should be worshipped as guru. But what if your father is a demon? Then that is a quandary. That is a very difficult situation. Of course, Lord Krishna, because he is Ishwara, he is the supreme controller. Then when he comes in this world, he can do what he likes. For instance, he killed his maternal uncle Kamsa because he was a demon. He just punched him to death in front of the whole population of Mathura. Krishna didn't care. He just beat his uncle to death in the wrestling arena. And everyone was, well, of course, the devotees, they were engladdened. But much of the population, because Kamsa was their king, they were shocked. And after that, this was one of the ways in which other demons like Shishupal, they defamed Krishna. Look at him. He's a killer of his own uncle, his own superior. But of course, Krishna can do that. That is his position as Ishvara. Once a devotee came to Srila Prabhupada to confess that he was in great distress because of the nature of ISKCON. We have a particular social phenomena in our movement, which has been with us all along, that there's always so much criticism between different devotees. So this particular devotee had become an object of much criticism. So he was feeling very distressed. And he went to Srila Prabhupada and he said, "Srila Prabhupada, I don't know what to do. I'm so heartbroken because everyone is talking about me. Everyone is saying I'm bad. I made so many mistakes, this, that." And Srila Prabhupada said, "They say the same about Krishna. They say the same about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." But of course, there is a big difference between us and Lord Krishna. Those who criticize Lord Krishna, they go to hell because Krishna is God. But if someone is criticizing you, actually Prabhupada once said, if someone comes up and gives you a slap, before you respond, you should ask him why, because there may be a good reason. So we, conditioned souls, do not have the right of Krishna's response. The material energy is not necessarily on our side, especially if we are not fixed up devotees of the Lord, like Prahlad Maharaj. We make mistakes. This is the point in the purport, that living in this material world means we're in duality. We try to do good. We try to be, Prabhupada states it so nicely here, that although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. So even while performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. It's inevitable, because that is the way this world works. We create enemies although we don't want to, and we get criticized. So then, what to do? We have to be very, very, very careful. Just because we are Vaishnavas, we should not think we are Vaishnavas. But we may think we are Vaishnavas, and we may think because I am a Vaishnava, then I have the right to respond as Krishna responds. As Vishnu does, so should Vaishnava do. No. Arjuna didn't think like that. Arjuna was right there on the same chariot with Lord Krishna. And in front of him he saw his superiors, his guru, grandfather Bhishma, his friends, his relatives, waiting to engage in battle with him. And what did he think? Did he think, "Oh, I'm here with Krishna, just wait, I'm going to slaughter these guys. Their blood is going to be flowing, I'll chop off their heads, I'll show them." Not at all. Not at all. Although Arjuna was so powerful, of course he could do that. But he became mortified. He was afraid, trembling. You read in the first chapter his response to that situation. He was trembling. He became feverish. He dropped his bow. He sat down. "Oh Krishna, what am I going to do? This is such a horrible situation." And he is Arjuna. And what are we? We are not Kshatriyas. We like maybe to think that way. I always used to like to think that way, that I am a Kshatriya. I can tell people off. I can tell people that they should not have joined this movement, and so on and so forth. I thought that my business was to make everyone else humble. That was my service in life. But as I reach my old age now, I begin to rethink all these things, and I realize how much I would like to do over again in my relationships with other devotees. So this is what Prabhupada means. We should be expert. Arjuna actually, although Srila Prabhupada says his arguments were ultimately false, still, because Arjuna was a real devotee, therefore his compassion and his caution was natural to him. And this is what it means to be expert. Before acting, one, as it is said, that nice English expression, look before you leap. Huh? And now we have this wonderful example of Prahlad Maharaj, the best among exalted devotees. He was a helpless 5-year-old boy. What could he do? He was not in any position to lash out at anyone, to tell anyone off. A little 5-year-old boy, his own father, the most powerful person in the universe among the living entities, was the greatest demon. So our position is analogous to that. We are simply little children. So what should we do? Srila Prabhupada's answer here. We should incorporate into the core of our heart. A devotee should expertly manage to always think of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. Yes, we are so inexpert in so many things. We make so many mistakes. After all, Prahlad Maharaj, he had the advantage of having this remembrance of Krishna. Anusmarana, it's called. This concentrated remembrance of Krishna from even before he was born. And as I was speaking of my background, I was on my way to becoming a terrorist my first 20 years. And then Prabhupada saved me. And then I had to try to shift into reverse and back up 20 years. That's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. So, because of our upbringing, we don't know how to behave properly. But Sri Prahlad Maharaj, she's showing what we should do. We should at least become expert in remembering Krishna. Huh? Avoid acting blindly. Huh? Take shelter of Lord Krishna. Take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev, as Sri Prahlad Maharaj does. Because Lord Nrisimhadev, as there's this nice verse, Ugra Upi Anugra Evayam, it goes on like this, stating that the lioness, she's very fearsome, as is Lord Nrisimhadev. But the lioness is fearsome to the other animals, to her own cubs, her own little ones. Nrikeshari, the tiny little lions, lion cubs, she's very protective. She has to be, because so many other animals, jackals and so on, if they get the chance, they will kill those cubs, they will eat them. So she's very fond and very protective of her own cubs. So similarly, Lord Nrisimhadev is very protective to those who take shelter at his lotus feet. So on this day, Sri Nrisimha Chaturdasi, remembering all of our disqualifications and all of our offenses, at least I'm remembering my... No, you have not made any offense, but I'm remembering my offenses. So what is our only hope but to take shelter of the Supreme Lord Narasimhadev, who is so favorable to those who have nowhere else to go except to his lotus feet. But then I have a further problem. What I have just described is your great fortune. That Lord Nrisimhadev is very protective of his devotees, but I am not a devotee. This is my problem. So, but there's one chance. There's one chance for me, and therefore I have to beg all of you very humbly that you'll kindly facilitate saving my soul. I have a nice picture in one magazine. There's a nice picture. It shows a mother cat, and she has her kittens. And you've probably all seen that scene when the mother cat is sitting like this, and she has You know the cat look of bliss. Her little kittens are there. They're nestled next to her. Some of them are sucking milk from her nipples. And she's very contented. But also, in that same nest, mother cat's nest, there's one baby owl. You know this bird? In German they call uhu, with a big round, just like a cat's eyes too. So then the caption on this picture says, this is a picture taken by one person who found this baby owl in the forest, had fallen from the nest. And the poor thing was dying. And he was trying to take care of the owl, but the owl was not thriving on his care. What was lacking was motherly love. So then he thought, because this little owl was ready to die, so he thought, because the kitten was there, the cat was there with her kittens, and he thought, well, this is the only chance. Of course, the owl, being a bird, is the natural enemy of the cat. And cats find nothing more tasty than little birds in the nest. They like to climb up trees and find those nests and snack on the little birds. But he just thought, maybe because this bird has these big, you see, orange cat's eyes, maybe the mother will like the owl. So then, either way, this poor creature is going to die. Either dies of a broken heart, or if the cat doesn't show mercy, then the owl will be killed by the cat. So then he placed the little owl in the nest. And the little kittens, they immediately accepted the baby owl as their brother. And they were, you know how little kittens do, they were rubbing their heads, and he was rubbing back. And when the mother came, she, seeing her family had, happy family had grown by one member, she was very happy. And so she was careful, went out hunting for mice to bring one extra mouse, because owls also like mice. So they have the same diet as cats. So she was very happy to provide. And so this picture, you see this nice picture. There's a mother cat with great contentment on her face. The little kittens nestling there, some of them looking in the camera with their big eyes. And the owl is also there with his big eyes looking in the camera, with the owl smile on his face. So among all of you who are like the little cubs of Lord Nisringadev, I am actually, I must confess, some alien entity, like an owl. But I do have a certain similar taste as you in some respects. I also like to chant Hare Krishna. And I like to be with devotees. So if all of you will kindly accept me as part of your family, then I'm sure that Lord Nisringadev will protect me also. And if you do not accept me, and you have every right to not to accept me because I'm the greatest defender, then I have no shelter. But I have heard, I've read in Srila Prabhupada's books, I do read Srila Prabhupada's books sometimes when I'm not wasting my time reading mundane philosophy books. And I found in Srila Prabhupada's books that the Vaishnavas are very merciful. So I present my case to you, and I ask you to please consider it. And if you can make room for me, like those little kittens made room for their little owl friend, then I will be so grateful to all of you. I will sincerely try to serve you the rest of my life, avoiding like AIDS, like Ebola, you know, these horrible diseases, which are avoiding like the plague, to even think of any offense at your lotus feet. So this is my prayer to you on this day of Nisringa Chaturdasi. Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol, Sri Narasingadev, Sri Prahlad Narasingadev, Sri Lakshmi Narasingadev ki jai. So what time is it? Oh, 8:45. So the greeting is at 9:00. So we have 15 minutes. So I don't know if anybody has, if you want to make some rebuke or anything you'd like to say? Question? Please, Hare Krishna. Yes? Yes, all right. I agree with you. Krishna himself, because he is the ideal personality, he is also ideally humble. And you see in the pastime of Shishupal, Shishupal was a great demon, and he was criticizing Krishna again and again and again and again, and Krishna didn't respond until he had committed, I believe, 100 offenses, because his mother had requested Krishna, "I know my son is a demon." His mother was a devotee, but she knew that her son was a demon. "And I know that he will criticize you, but please forgive him 100 times." And actually the only reason that Lord Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra to cut off Shishupal's head at the end was because Krishna's devotees who were present were becoming very agitated. And that's, you see, what we have to worry about. Krishna, he's transcendental. Actually, he's transcendental to our, if we criticize him. What does he care? What is Krishna's devotees? Now, I don't say these devotees are going to cut off your head either. But there are some devotees who actually have that service. One of them is Durga Ma, who is the personified material energy. She has various inauspicious features like Goddess Kali, Chandima, and so on. Sharp teeth, many arms, long tongue, garland with human heads, dancing on the heads of demons. And it is her, actually her great ecstasy to destroy anyone who opposes Krishna. And, you know, you cannot reason with her because she's very wild. She doesn't respond to, you know, reason. "Well, you know, I didn't know what I was saying." Whack! Off with the head. Like in Alice in Wonderland, there was that queen who was always saying, "Off with their heads, off with their heads." But of course, if we have to go deeper into this, this might sound very gruesome. This might sound very gruesome, but we have to go a step deeper that actually for the soul there's never any birth and death. And this is Maya, although she exhibits this fearsome quality of devouring the demons, the non-devotees. At the same time, what is she devouring? Only the material body. The soul is eternal. And that is actually her mercy. By destroying the demons, they may become a bit thoughtful in their next life. They may think before they let their tongues loose again. And reflecting on the horrors of this material existence, the misery that Maya Devi puts them in, they may even take shelter of the Lord's devotees and become purified and go back home, back to Godhead. And when Prakriti, when Maya Devi, when she sees that these rascals have become purified by the association of the Vaishnavas and our humble saintly Vaishnavas, she offers them her respect. She wants to get their mercy. As long as they remain demons, she's going to chop off their head. But if they become devotees, then she wants the dust from their lotus feet. Because, you see, she's a great devotee who thinks, "Alas, because I am so unfortunate, I have to remain here in this material world as the mistress of this prison house of material energy. I am the mistress." She's material energy personified. So you see in the prayers of Durga Devi and also her husband Lord Shiva, who is the Lord of the Tamoguna, they're very humble devotees. Very, very humble. Very humble also about their service. "We are so unfortunate. This is our service. We have to maintain this material world. We have to destroy the demons. We don't have a chance to simply worship the Lord in ecstasy like the devotees." And that's why they want the dust of the lotus feet of the saintly Vaishnavas. Yes? Yes. Yes. That is the only medicine. Our only hope is the shelter of the devotees of the Lord. And that's why this movement ISKCON is so special. This movement is so special. And Prabhupada used to say, just like during the British Empire days, the Englishmen would say, "England, with all thy faults, I love thee." And that should be our attitude towards ISKCON also. We may see so many faults in our society, but ultimately Vaishnava Sangha is our only hope. And that is what this movement provides very strongly, very purely, even today. Otherwise this movement could not spread. If there was no purity in this movement, if there were not some pure devotees in this movement, then this movement would have fallen apart years ago. I never forget when I first came to Germany. Bhakti Bhai Bhava Maharaj, at that time Suchandra Prabhu, he made what I thought was a very wise devotee. And he made a comment which impressed me very much. And this was way back in the late 70s when I first got to know him. But somehow in the conversation, we were talking about different countries in Europe. And so he said about Italy, because Italy is famous, always changing governments. You see, they're always changing prime. Recently, they practically put every member of parliament, every judge in jail, and put new ones, and then they put them in jail. And this has been going on for many, many years. So there's always turmoil in the Italian government. But he made the comment, but still the Italian government is there. He said it means it's very strong. And I never thought of it that way. And I thought, this is really wise. And now, you know, I reflect on ISKCON in the same way. So much turmoil, so much criticism, so much sometimes on the verge of desperation. But ISKCON remains. So it must be very, very strong. We have to face that fact. It must be a very, very strong movement. And the reason for its strength is because it facilitates genuine Vaishnava Sangha, no nonsense Vaishnava Sangha, the real thing. And that is wonderful. That is so rare in this world. So we must count our blessings that we are members of ISKCON, and we must try to take full advantage. Just meditate on how rare it is. As I travel, you know, I travel broadly throughout Europe. I come in contact with so many people, so fallen, so sinful, so unfortunate. And, you know, going through these spiritual deserts, some countries in my zone are literally spiritual deserts, like Greece, for instance. You know. And, you know, having to confront 9 million Greeks, 9 million maniacs. And then, when in the midst of this ocean of madness, one can meet the one or two devotees that are there. There's just a handful of devotees in that country. One feels so fortunate. And of course, these devotees, being in Greece or coming from Greece, they certainly have their own idiosyncrasies, no doubt. But one, in against the background of total madness, then a devotee with all of his idiosyncrasies is just the shelter you want to get out of the blazing fire of material existence. It's the only shelter. And if we could just cultivate this outlook, just try to see past the spots in the moon to that pure soul who is so fortunate to have surrendered himself to Srila Prabhupada's great mission, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If we could just learn to appreciate this Sangha, then how much better we would be. So again, I think the time is up. We should start going over. But again, this is my humble prayer to all of you, that you kindly churn this great ocean of nectar in which you are situated, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Churn it, make it sweeter and sweeter. And then persons who are really fallen like myself, we may be able to make advancement someday by your mercy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srina Sringadev ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari.